For NPR Music, I'm Jasmine Garst in Mexico City. That noise you hear in the background is zapateo. It's the dance style of Son Jarocho. Son Jarocho is a popular folk genre in Mexico. It originated in the port city of Veracruz in the 18th century, and it's had a resurgence among hip, young, urban Mexicans. The zapateo is a mix between tap dance and flamenco. It's really a sight to see, and I'm watching it at this dance studio called Centro Cultural La Pirámide, where young Mexicans come to study Son Jarocho music and dance.
Entonces, para que tengan este, como la ubicación, ¿no? Estos pasos, cuando son en contratiempo, le puedo hacer los pasos que son este, contras, ¿no? Para que se escuche diferente.
Freddy Vega is leading this class. He's a widely respected teacher, and get this, he is the fifth generation of Son Jarocho musicians in his family. Freddy was kind enough to invite me to his house after the class and talk about Jarocho. Now, for the next couple of minutes, the show is going to be in Spanish. And if you don't speak Spanish, just listen to the great music we're going to play and try to catch Freddy's beautiful Veracruz accent. We're going to switch back to English in just a little bit.
Estamos acá con Freddy Vega, de Los Vega. Contame sobre la banda, primero.
Bueno, Los Vega es una familia de músicos de tradición. Nosotros, el grupo Los Vega, somos la quinta generación. Entonces, ya todos somos primos, hermanos y a veces tíos. Y sobrinos.
Y lo que ustedes tocan se llama Son Jarocho. Estamos haciendo ahora un especial acerca del Son Jarocho. Contanos un poquito sobre la historia del Son Jarocho. Inicia en Veracruz, ¿no es cierto?
Sí, bueno, inicia una parte donde la música campesina es como una parte de comunicación, ¿no? De comunicación de comunidades. Y ya ahorita, afortunadamente, ha llegado a comunicarse en otros países nuestra música, que es el Son Jarocho campesino, ¿no? Y entonces ya esta es una tradición donde se viene ejecutando, ya tiene más de 400 años esta música. Entonces mis abuelos fueron heredados también, ¿no? De esta tradición campesina.
Ahora, lo que tengo entendido es que en Veracruz hay muchísima influencia africana a comparación del resto con México. ¿Cómo se nota eso en el jarocho?
Claro, se nota mucho en los sones como de percutivos, donde el cascabel, el zapateado, el toro sacamandú, que son sonidos negros en realidad, ¿no? Donde se mete mucho el zapateado y la quijada de caballo, que se usa como güiro, y también el instrumento que es el pandero tlacotalpeño. También es como cuero, un cuero que se rasca, ¿no? Entonces, son esos sonidos africanos. Entonces, pues llegaron estos esclavos ahí al puerto, porque el puerto es un donde empezaron a llegar esas cargas de emigraciones y esos negros que venían como ayudando, ¿no? Entonces, en aquel tiempo, pues no tenían como instrumento, ¿no? Entonces ellos se hacían sus instrumentos de lo que encontraban, de cuero, de víbora, y a veces las cuerdas no eran cuerdas de plástico. Ya cuando traían muchos animales para cruzar el traslado del océano, los animales que se morían empezaron a hacer cuerdas de tripa de gato o de vaca. Entonces esas eran las cuerdas de los instrumentos que se usaban en aquellos tiempos en las jaranas y requintos.
Y algo que te quería preguntar es algo que hablamos un poco en el programa, es cómo algunos tipos de música en algunos países son o prohibidos o mal vistos. Por ejemplo, en Brasil, cuando los esclavos bailaban capoeira, se prohibió en un momento porque estaba visto como una manera de juntarse y de comunicarse. ¿Pasó algo así con el son jarocho?
Sí, mira, fíjate que en el tiempo de la Inquisición había una letra que se llama el chuchumbé, ¿no? El chuchumbé. Entonces, decía el verso que dice, el Papa llegó a La Habana, pero el diablo lo tentó. Al mirar una cubana, el chuchumbé se le alzó debajo de la sotana. Entonces, eran versos como muy atrevidos, ¿no? Y en aquellos tiempos, pues no eran... pues bien visto, ¿no? Bien escuchado, porque era como una ofensa, ¿no? Para la gente de los frailes, ¿no? Eran como muy pues revoltoso, ¿no? Como que faltaban al respeto a la sociedad, ¿no? Entre comillas.
Es un poco lo que pasaba con la bachata en República Dominicana, que lo prohibieron porque era bachata roja, era tan atrevida, tan erótica, que estaba como mal visto por el dictador Trujillo. ¿Y el resto de México cómo veía el jarocho?
Bueno, el resto de... siempre en aquel tiempo lo veían al jarocho una parte... lo tuvieron que vestir como de blanco al jarocho. Entonces le llamaron son blanco. Porque y a la música fueron como adaptando esta música, el son jarocho, al escenario, ¿no? Y en realidad fueron dejando la buena información en los pueblos, porque era muy atrevido según ellos. Y era en realidad... pues una información donde se hablaba, digamos, a boca de jarro. Era tan, tan clara la información que te abría los ojos, ¿no? Y a la gente se le hacía muy atrevido, ¿no? De hablar de esa forma. Entonces era como hablar las cosas como son, qué es lo que me pasa, qué es lo que necesito. Y eso era muy atrevido para la gente de la sociedad, ¿no? Entonces, esa información se fue rezagando a los pueblos. Entonces, la gente que querían como nada más por encimita esta información, lo vestían de blanco y improvisar cosas como para hacerte reír, ¿no? Como que sin respeto, ¿no? Entonces... de alguna manera se fueron aprovechando de esa nobleza, de esta música campesina, fueron utilizando la parte chusca, la parte pues divertida, ¿no? Entonces, pero fueron dejando de lado la información que en realidad se había rezagado tanto, pero ahora... ha tomado una fuerte fuerza y ya le valió lo que dijeran los medios de la comunicación de la sociedad, ¿no?
Me interesa eso de la información, además de ser subidos de tono, ¿hay como un contenido de política o de protesta en los jarochos?
Sí, fíjate que... la protesta que nosotros vamos ejerciendo es la parte donde queremos más información, ¿no? Bueno, en realidad queremos compartir esta información a toda la gente que esté interesada a la música tradicional o simplemente a cualquier música, ¿no? Porque yo creo que como los músicos africanos, músicos gitanos, yo creo que esa gente tiene mucha información valiosa que no se ha platicado con ellos. Entonces, por ejemplo, estos viejos campesinos que son como la fuerza del movimiento de la información, creo que acercarse más a ellos, ¿no? Como que la gente hay que ir a las comunidades y de difundir la información, que la música campesina no es música de escenario, es una información para la comunidad, para todo el mundo, ¿no? Que estamos careciendo de información, sinceramente, ¿no? Entonces, ahorita hay muchos jaraneros y nos da mucho gusto, entonces me gustaría que la gente que está tocando, pues son campesinos, se involucraran un poco más y buscaran un poco más de información, que dentro de una cuerda de sol hay más que un sonido, ¿no? Hay mucha más información de la que uno cree. La guacamaya se trata de la naturaleza, ¿no? Y también se trata de cómo uno va destruyendo nuestra naturaleza, ¿no? Entonces se trata de la vida del campo, ¿no? Que este son tiene más de 400 años. Entonces esa información se viene arrastrando todo ese tiempo.
Pobrecita guacamaya que de madrugada canta, que de madrugada canta, pobrecita guacamaya.
El que duerme en cama ajena muy temprano se levanta, jalándose la melena, mirando pa' donde arranca.
Vuela, 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 vuela palomita, no le hace que yo sea feo, fila que quiero el bonita.
Vuela, 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 como yo volé, cuando me llevaban preso, señorita, por usted.
Más azules el que quiera guacamaya.
Para pasear en Celaya, sábado, domingo y lunes. Sábado, domingo y lunes, hasta el martes que me vaya.
Vuela, 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 vuela para tu lejo. La cárcara guarda el palo y la cárcara el pellejo.
Vuela, 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 voladora. Si me ha de querer mañana, vámonos queriendo ahora.
Sí, la última pregunta que te quería hacer es sobre, hay todo también un resurgimiento de son jarocho en Estados Unidos, en los hijos de mexicanos, en la comunidad inmigrante, los nietos de mexicanos que están en Estados Unidos. En realidad yo me reenamoré del son jarocho a través de bandas chicanas como Radio Jarocho, Las Cafeteras. ¿Estás al tanto de ese movimiento? ¿Qué te parece?
Sí, mira, me parece increíble que la música ahora sí que ha trascendido fronteras, ¿no? Esta música no tiene frontera, aunque a veces el humano es tan cuadrado, pero en realidad son humanos que escuchan esta música y les toca el corazón en realidad. Porque son humanos. Pero creo que dar esa información de esta música tradicional y apoyar allá en Estados Unidos la información de esta música campesina y música urbana, porque a mí me da mucho gusto que se vayan haciendo muchos arreglos y un montón de cosas. Pero también no hay que olvidarse de dónde viene.
Amada Marcelina, le vengo yo a avisar que el son en California se ha vuelto popular. Amada Marcelina, le vengo yo a avisar que el son en California se ha vuelto popular. Colas y Nicolás, lo mucho que te quiero, lo lejos que te vas. Colas, Colas, Colas y Nicolás, con Amada Marcelina no te canses de viajar.
Thanks to Jasmine for that wonderful and insightful interview. Now, I want to give our friends who don't speak Spanish a quick recap of what Freddy Vega told Jazz about his involvement with the Son Jarocho in Veracruz. His group is called Los Vega, and they are the fifth generation of a family of Jarocho performers. He also explained that initially the music and the dance were used not for entertainment or even cultural expression, but it was a form of communication among distant communities of farm workers back in the 18th century. The music has African roots by way of Africans who arrived in Veracruz as both slaves and free men. You know, the triplet feel to the music, the 1-2-3, 1-2-3 that you hear, is very similar to many forms of African music. And some of the instruments used in playing traditional jarocho were also African in origin. He also explained that initially, the dance and the music were prohibited by Mexican authorities back in the late 18th century because it was considered obscene. The songs were also used as a form of protest among the earliest performers. It was seen as a way to stand up to the government and to the church to reclaim a traditional culture that they were trying to wipe out. And finally, he expressed great satisfaction that the Son Jarocho has migrated to the U.S. He says the new forms and approaches of the U.S.-based musicians help to maintain tradition while stretching the boundaries of the music. And it also helps young Chicano and Chicana musicians to never forget where their culture comes from. And now we'll hear some more of this song called El Colas by the Mexican group Mono Blanco. Then we'll migrate back to the U.S. and meet up in the studio with a jarocho musician who will explain how the music crossed the border and was even performed by Donald Duck. Okay, now that we've spent time with Jasmine in her dance class, which was very enlightening, thank you very much.
Hope you're still in one piece.
Still in one piece. We're going to bring it back here to the United States, and with us to help tell the story of how Jarocho made it from Mexico and has had a resurgence here in the United States is Alexandro Hernandez. He is with the group Aparato. We've played his music on the show here a few times. Alexandro, thank you for joining us today.
Un saludo a toda la banda jaranera México, Estados Unidos. Thank you for having me on the show, and hello to all NPR listeners.
Hola, Ale.
You know, he's part of a movement of the Jarocho revival, primarily among young Chicanos in California. He's also an ethnomusicology doctoral candidate at UCLA, and his dissertation focuses on the Son Jarocho as a music of struggle and protest. And the song we're playing right now has special relevance in the lyrics as it talks about a transition from Mexico to the United States.
Exactly. It starts off, the verse goes, si cruzas por Tijuana, ahí hay flota fandanguera. So it's beginning from the border. You know, if you do go to Tijuana, there's jaraneros, jaraneras out there. You go into San Diego, Orange County, Los Angeles, all the way into Northern California, a whole entire group of people playing this music and having fandangos.
And the reason we invited Alexandro is because, you know, one of the things we do on Alt Latino is we don't just talk about music. We talk about how music reflects movements, social movements, movements of people from one place to another. And Alexandro, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Son Jarocho is just a really great way of tracing my cultural migration and evolution, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. All the way from... I like to start from Afro-Cuba into Mexico and how it's, you know, moves into the United States. Yeah, we have a long history even here in the U.S. with the Son Jarocho.
So tell me about the first time Jarocho starts coming into the U.S. I mean, is there a moment in time in which you can say this is the first time Jarocho started getting played in the U.S.?
Where I start off in my own work is in the mid-1940s, an arpista and also cinema worker, Andrés Huesca, he actually is from El Puerto de Veracruz, goes into Mexico City and he's coming out in the La Época de Oro films, like the golden age of cinema films. And he also came to the U.S. and participated playing music in Los Angeles. He moves to Los Angeles. He actually passed away in Los Angeles in 1957.
Wow.
And so he's part of that initial branch of Jarocho that starts to get commercialized, especially radio, film, recordings.
Mm-hmm.
es el relajo.
Escóndete tras las trancas, chiquita, que viene bravo.
Y aviéntame tu rebozo, mi vida, a capotearlo. Toro, toro, toro. Entra de largo,
que mi chica chula, torito, me está mirando. A nadie quiere.
Y haciéndose moscas muertas, torito, traidoras muerte. Toro, toro, toro. Entra de largo,
que mi pieta chula, torito, me está mirando.
Toro, toro, toro. Toro relajo, ya te estoy quitando, torito, lo han ebrestado. Mi vida a su chiquero. Toro, toro, toro. Entra de largo,
que mi pieta chula, torito, me está mirando.
Toro, toro, toro. Toro relajo, ya te estoy quitando, torito, lo han ebrestado. ¡Ea!
So back in those days, in the 40s, was Son Jarocho, you mentioned this was like la época de oro, of the golden age of Mexican cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Was any Jarocho making it into soundtracks, movie soundtracks?
Andrés Huesca participated in about 70 films, and he's in everything from Allá en el Rancho Grande, Solo Veracruz es Bello. In the U.S., he participated in the soundtrack to a Disney film called Los Tres Caballeros, where...
You're kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Or the Three Caballeros.
Oh, can we listen to that?
There's a fandango scene that maybe you could take the snippet out of, a soundbite out of it. It's really interesting because they go into, like, Donald Duck starts dancing, swing.
he's probably better than me.
Aha, my friends! Bienvenidos, cuates! Welcome to Mexico!
This is from 1944. Believe it or not, 1944, The Three Caballeros from, of all people, Walt Disney.
Yes.
Featuring
Andrés Huesca as part of the soundtrack.
No, 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 boys. You are off the beat. This is the way.
Now, where do you go?
If we look back at Los Tres Caballeros, is that it's an incredible document of who was involved in the time. So here is a scene of a fandango, you know, with Donald Duck and Pancho Pistoles and Jose Carioca, right?
Oh my God!
But it's supposed to take place in Veracruz, but it's actually one, it's cutting-edge technology for the time because you're putting in cartoons next to humans.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all done in a studio in Burbank, California. And the whole dance group is called, they're called the Mexican Players, Chicanas and Chicanos from the Pomona or Claremont area outside of L.A. or, the outskirts of Los Angeles County. So it's an incredible document of Mexican-American participation as well.
How did these new Chicanos that were consuming cinema all of a sudden, and Mexicans who were consuming cinema see Son Jarocho?
I think maybe early on, and as I'm starting to interview and find people that were around, at least playing since the 1950s, is that I think it's a source of empowerment, a way to reinforce cultural heritage in a way. You know, this is a type of identity that you take on as a form of resistance, you know? And Jarochos, I think, face similar kinds of struggles in that, like, oh, you're the people from the campo, you're the people, you know, that work the fields. And Chicanos, on the other hand, here in the U.S., you know, seen also as a very much treated as second-class citizens historically. And to find this music and to be empowered by it is something incredibly important on both sides of the border.
Was that welcome or was it eyed suspiciously?
Of course, we're looking at these examples and we're looking at major cultural stereotypes at the same time, right? So it's kind of, and literally you have caricatures going in and caricaturing a culture, right? Which is, it is problematic, right? And that's how the larger society, be it in the U.S. or other countries, begin to create an idea of you know, a group of people. And I think it takes, I'm not so sure about back then, but at least in this generation of jaraneros and jaraneras, it's a very critical group of people, a very conscious group of people that are very much, especially if you talk about Chicanas and Chicanos, you know, we're not trying to be jarochos. And we're not trying to go into a culture because we're missing something over here. No, we're being enhanced by this experience at the same time without denying our own legacy here in this country.
You know, you mentioned Andres Huesca, mm-hmm. who is part of a pivotal scene of moving that music from Mexico to the United States. But in particular, he's responsible for one song that virtually the whole world knows.
Para cantar la bamba, para cantar la bamba, si necesita una poca de gracia, una poca de gracia y otra cosita, y arriba, y arriba.
Right, and I read an article in La Jornada, which is a newspaper there in Mexico, and according to the author, Cruz Bárcenas, he credits Andrés Huesca as making La Bamba popular throughout the world in around the 1940s.
Wow. That song has deeper roots, deeper history,
exactly.
Going back centuries of into what we heard in Jasmine's piece earlier in the show.
Exactly.
So let's go from there. So you have Andres Huesca introducing this song, but then Richie Valens, or Richie Valenzuela.
Yeah.
He releases a rock and roll version of La Bamba, and I got to tell you, you know, that literally changed the world for a lot of people. And it changed the world in a way that the Three Caballeros, Los Tres Caballeros, didn't, because he was one of us. I was 1 year old, so yeah, I claimed him.
Yo no soy marinero.
The film La Bamba, which was made by Luis Valdez, which is the story of Richie Valens, the film depicts the character played by Lou Diamond Phillips as hearing it in a bar in Tijuana one day.
With Los Lobos playing, along with Fermín Herrera.
Yeah, and the
Los
band
Lobos
of the...
have been around forever.
They've been around more than 40 years.
It's like the Mexican Revolution and Los Lobos were playing
with
in
Pancho
a bar.
Villa.
Rango and Los Lobos are playing.
Hernán Cortés arrived and Los Lobos
Los
were
Lobos.
Playing. Oh, I love Los Lobos. Come on. Alexandra, I'm wondering, you know, there's always a story, a migration story about how this music arrives to the other side of the border. Mm-hmm. Now, did it arrive in that moment because Mexico had this golden era of entertainment and cinema, and it was just pushing this new identity? Or was there also an internal migration between Veracruz and DF, or Veracruzanos and Los Angeles?
The internal migration within Mexico and the new opportunities created through Mexican film, radio, and recording was calling, you know, some of the best musicians from, you know, this Veracruz. The migration kind of happens where you go into the city of Veracruz, and then folks coming from the city or in parts surrounding it into Mexico DF, because now people can make a living gigging, can make a living coming out in films, at least for that moment. And then, so, you know, that's why the story of Andres Huesca is so unique, because he's one of the few that came over to the U.S. with that status, you know, already connected to an industry. And and a lot of people after him, whether they were from Veracruz or other parts, I don't think had those same connections. More like working class musicians coming into the U.S. playing Son Jarocho music, and also working class musician Chicanas and Chicanos playing it. You know, there's the example of Los Lobos, all from East L.A., getting exposed to traditional music from Mexico, yet the Son Jarocho is their foundation as they began, as Los Lobos del Este de Los Angeles.
That's amazing.
So that moves us into the 1970s with the Son Jarocho amidst the Chicano movement.
Okay, so, but Alexandro, if we're going to talk about one band that you would say they ushered Son Jarocho into the 70s, what should we listen to?
That's a tough choice between either Conjunto Huellapan or Los Lobos del Este de Los Angeles, who used Jarocho as their foundation. You know, we have to also say that Los Lobos were playing boleros, they were playing rancheras, they were playing all sorts of different kinds of music. But I think what's incredible is Los Lobos participated in a recording called Si Se Puede, you know, the slogan for the United Farm Workers.
Yes.
And they remade a Son Jarocho tune called El Tilingo Lingo. And they you know, it's a reinvention. It's not done in the way it was originally recorded, in, like, say, if you listen to Andres Huesca or Lino Chavez. But El Tilingo Lingo, they're playing it with mandolins, and it almost sounds like a polka. But it's great because they're talking about the grape strike, right? Or also the strike against la lechuga, you know, lettuce, you know, don't consume lettuce. And they talk about this in their lyrics, you know. And here they are. This is an album used to raise funds for the United Farm Workers with Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez.
So here's what we're going to do. The song is available on an album called Rolas de Atlan, Songs
yes.
of the Chicano Movement. It's on Smithsonian Folkways. But I found a vinyl version, clean vinyl version of
awesome.
Si Se Puede.
What, Felix, awesome. You are so hip.
Oh, my gosh, no. I found a vinyl version of that album that it was everywhere in Chicano parties in the 70s.
Nice.
That big, bright red cover.
Yeah.
Okay? So we're going to play the vinyl version.
Yes.
Okay?
We need to wax.
Let's do it.
This is old school. This is El Tilingo Lingo from Los Lobos del Este de Los Angeles from the album Si Se Puede.
Jarabe huertanzón, pa' bailarte lingo lingo, se baila singulario, se baila como la bamba, jarabe huertanzón, del lingo lingo lingo, del lingo lingo la, qué bonitas las chicanas por acá. Thank you.
bonitas las chicanas por acá.
Qué lingo, 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 qué lingo, lingo, la. Qué bonitas las chicanas por acá.
Alexandro, a lot of times when music comes to the U.S. or travels anywhere in the world, it changes, you know, you incorporate other influences. And Felix, I'm thinking about salsa, you know, and then all of a sudden you find a salsa encounters in New York R&B and soul, and you get Boogaloo. What musical influences did it absorb once it came into the U.S.?
It absorbs everything. We can even talk about how Richie Valens reinterpreted it with as a rock and roll tune, Los Lobos doing it in their own way, or even into the 1990s, early 2000s, a band like Quetzal, who will put jarana to rhythm and blues, would put it to rock, will put it to a salsa tune. It's really, these instruments are very much can be adjusted to any sound you can think of, and even aparato, where I use it more as like an ethereal kind of post-punk sound, where a lot of the traditional strumming is codified, but it's there and it's informed by the tradition, but we're doing it in a different way, and that's, it's just so natural. Like, in even if we want to even jump all the way back as a tune like El Chuchumbe, which began as a dance in Cuba, played by gente de color quebrada, right, and essentially people of color. It gets transferred into Veracruz in the 1700s and is banned by 1776 because porque se bailaba de ombligo a ombligo. It was danced from belly button to belly button. And oh. I consider this a proto-son because in the historical accounts, there isn't anything mentioning jaranas. It's just mentioning the dance and the people who did it. And so we don't even know if this was a zapateado or what kind of dance, or if they were dancing on a tarima, which is the, you know, the wooden platform that is used for percussive dance in the Son Jarocho, and is central to the fandango, which is the communal celebration of Son Jarocho. This recording that we have of El Chuchumbe, originally done by Mono Blanco, is a result of, you know, uncovering the old versos that the clergy, the Catholic clergy or documentarians of the time, were writing down because they were picaresque, right? They were poking fun of the church. They were very a lot of sexual double entendre. And so what we hear of this of El Chuchumbe is also a reimagining of what applying jaranas and arpa and zapateado into this proto-son, as I like to call it.
You brought in a version of El Chuchumbe. Why don't you introduce this?
Yes, and this is El Chuchumbe, done by the legendary Mono Blanco.
What year is this from?
I believe this recording is 1992, done for the album Fandango.
Suelto nación, bonito se oye y se ve.
La 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 la.
I love that song.
It's got that Afro-Caribeño swing to it.
I know.
You know, that's one thing. I think I've mentioned this on the show before. You know, we were able to, Alexandro and I were able to play, do one gig together when he was here a while back. Little private party. Where,
what?
Yeah.
Where? When?
It was...
outskirts of Bethesda or something?
Yeah, it was...
Felix, when was this?
This was in the summer sometime. It was for a birthday party.
Where was I?
You were in Mexico.
No,
sorry.
That's not true, Felix. I went to Mexico in the fall.
It was a private party. A friend of mine asked me to come and put a group together. So he bought his requinto and the jarana, and I just took a drum set and a set of congas, and my son... Joaquin,
your son.
Yeah, he did the gig with us. But what was fascinating about it, and I've always wanted to play that music and just play it on conga because of that Afro-Caribbean connection,
yeah.
The Afro-Cuban
mm-hmm.
connection, because it's in three or in six, you know, and 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, mm-hmm. 4-5-6, which is some of the Santeria-based music is based on. And I have to say it was endlessly fascinating, man. It was just such a thrill to play and to hear you do the different things with it. You know, we sort of mixed it with jazz. You did a wonderful job of combining the things to try to fit the ambiance of the party. But ultimately, it was a big jam session.
Yes, it was.
And it was a lot of fun. But you'd really understand and feel that Afro-Cuban, Afro-Caribbean connection.
Definitely.
The deep, deep roots.
I think there's no... separate. We can't talk about Son Jarocho, especially now, especially when we're talking about the fandango branch of it, it's African rooted, you know, it's African rooted music, be it whether it was through Afro Cuba or different elements. For example, the word fandango, I've heard two different explanations, that it's either an Angolan term or a Bantu term, meaning to bring order to chaos. And this is what I heard from Patricio Hidalgo, who is from Veracruz, and I've heard him say, "Yo soy negro, I'm black," and he was part of the group Chuchumbe, not to mistaken it with the Son, who really become this group in Mexico I call them the Black Power Jarocho group, and you know they're introducing the conga, which also came in from Veracruz, and you know really putting the conversation of blackness at the forefront, you know, and even talking about el chuchumbe as a sound of resistance. And I even heard Patricio Hidalgo say that it was a lot of people of African origin that were constantly writing versos against the church, against the Inquisition, you know, against their own oppression.
Can we listen to something from him?
Yes, I actually have a recording, a very beautiful, beautiful, probably the most beautiful version that you would hear of El Pájaro Cu, which is sung by Patricio Hidalgo, and also Marisol from La Santa Cecilia. Recorded primarily with musicians from Los Angeles.
This must be pretty new, right?
Yes, 2011, 2012 is when it was released. It almost sounds like a bolero in three.
Thank you.
Okay, musically, I don't think I've ever heard a bolero in three.
Yeah, me neither. It's a very different thing.
It's haunting, and it's just, it really draws you in. And where you think you should be turning, you know, moving or turning, you're not. And it gives it a different funkiness, a different feel.
And her voice is perfect for this.
Yeah.
And it's great because it's talking about, it's contextualizing it in Los Angeles. Una paloma cantó sobre la Placita Olvera. That's the place that where Los Angeles actually starts. But it's also this kind of cultural tourist site. It's like a little Mexico, right, in the middle of downtown LA. But that's where Marisol, used to play as a kid. All to this very day, she goes and she plays there for people. She puts out her basket. I did it many times with her throughout the years, and you know, it's her, you know, paying homage and honoring the place that made her, you know?
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's a beautiful song. Okay, in our little time machine that we've been traveling in, our Jarocho time machine, we have brought it up to where we are today with the resurgence, like we said, the revival, which has been going on for a while, I guess.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, and how you entered into the scene and talk a little bit about some of the other groups that you've worked with or that you know about?
You know, there's a few powerful moments in my life that I've never forgotten. You know, I grew up as a heavy metal kid. By the time I...
What?
Oh, yeah. Black Sabbath was a milestone in my life.
Awesome.
And I grew up playing metal in high school.
Do you feel like that helped you play jarocho?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's some metal licks that I throw in on the guitarra de son or the requinto jarocho is my primary. I'm trying to be like Eddie Van Halen on it.
The Eddie Van Halen of jarocho.
Yeah. Eduardo Van Halen.
Eduardo Van Halen. Van Halen. But, I was a kid and La Bamba, the film, came out. And my first grade teacher, Mrs. Ramos, or La Señora Ramos, she had us dance La Bamba, and there's pictures of me doing this, and my mom like tells me she never saw me up to that point as a kid run out of the house so excited. She dressed me up, you know, with the white guayabera and white pants and, you know, and a red scarf, you know, that kind of stereotypic jarocho image, and we danced La Bamba. And it's interesting because we're talking about Los Angeles, and this is more specifically Monterey Park. I'm about 6-7 years old, and we're dancing with a lot of Asian Americans. You know, it's like little chicanitos, chicanitas, and Asian Americans dancing La Bamba. And that has always been this memory of mine, the Son Jarocho. And then there's, you know, from becoming this heavy metal kid, I heard Café Tacuba for the first time, and the first tune I heard was El Aparato.
Oh.
And you know, I'm like, what is that guitar-like instrument? It doesn't sound like a regular guitar. And so I opened up the liner notes to it, and there's this image of three jaraneros with their jaranas up in the air, and they're looking at Pablo being abducted by a UFO. And I was like, that is such an awesome concept. And this is kind of like the nerdy grounding of Aparato, my band, and where the name comes from.
Oh.
And I thought it was just perfect, you know. And I heard, and when I heard that jarana, I was just, you know, that I know I gotta find out what that instrument is. And I think what solidified it for me was hearing Los Lobos, and I heard the tune El Canelo. I'm like, there's that instrument again. You know, I heard Quetzal, like, there's that instrument. Ozomatli, there's that instrument. You know, the jarana. And, you know, sure enough, I actually took off to Veracruz. I landed at the home of Gilberto Gutierrez from Mono Blanco so he could make me a jarana. And I participated in my very first fandango ever there at a place called El Cazón, which is dedicated to Veracruz cultural music, including the Son Jarocho. And I knew, I was like, this is it for me. I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life.
Wow.
That's a great story.
That's amazing. I feel like we should listen to El Aparato.
Yes. the source of the band's name.
Yeah, let's listen to Café Tacuba's Aparato.
El aparato, cuando volteé lo tenía arriba, es una luz. zumbido de la luz. La escuchaba en mi cabeza, en lengua extraña me hablaba, pero entendí. Lo juro que no había tomado, solo estaba encandilado, la hora perdí.
So we're bringing Jarocho back to where we are today. And again, the theme of your dissertation is a Jarocho as an expression of resistance. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the themes that are that the musicians that are playing Jarocho taking on now?
We're taking on a lot of different and really critical themes, everything from anti-militarization, but especially soundtrack and people really, really supporting first-class citizenship for international migrants. You'll find jaraneros and jaraneras in Washington, D.C., up in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in Texas, and a lot of us out there in the marches. And early on, one of my first ever gigs was actually in San Antonio, because I started playing this music back home in Texas. I was born in L.A., but raised in Texas, South Texas specifically. And I got invited to play for the immigrant rights marches.
So the other day, Alexandro, the other day I was in Mexico City. I left my dance class, and I was in the car with a friend, and she started playing this this mixtape she had of jarocho mixed with hip hop. Mm. And I was wondering, where do you think jarocho is headed?
Where is jarocho headed? I think it's going to continue. It's growing. There's jaraneros and jaraneras having fandangos in Yakima, Washington. There's a jaranero couple that I met out of Charlottesville, Virginia. Even started playing Son Jarocho in San Antonio, and even in my hometown of Del Rio on the Texas-Mexican border. So it's in a lot of places, not only in the urban areas, but also in some smaller areas, in some smaller towns. With it, I think there's groups that work, and it's interesting because there's this like double consciousness amongst a lot of us where we can, really engage in the quote unquote traditional way of playing and having fandangos together, right? Gathering as musicians and having these, playing sones all night long. But those same people can also fuse the jarana, confuse the zapateado, the requinto jarocho, the versada, the percussion, with hip hop, with rock, with electronica. There's, you know, the group Sistema Bomb out of the Bay Area using, you know, doing electronica with it. There's Aparato playing it in more like a ethereal post-punk, you know, way of doing it. Quetzal fusing it with virtually anything they want to because of how incredibly talented they are. So I think I see a continuation of that double consciousness, I would say, of knowing how to engage, you know, what quote-unquote traditionally, but also, you know, the music is the result of cultural fusion, you know, and what it is a continuation of that fusion.
Of evolution.
Right.
Alexandro Hernandez, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your knowledge with us about Jarocho. This is something we've been wanting to do for a long time, so we're very, very happy that you were able to do it with us.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Which song should we play to go out on the show?
How about one for Una para las Mujeres?
Mm.
This one's By Las Cafeteras, an album that I produced called It's Time. And this is Mujer Soy.
Song, but we do have to say you can hear this song in its entirety on our website at npr.org/altlatino.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're NPR's Alt Latino, and we love talking to our listeners.
And this song will be added to our Alt Latino Radio 24/7 stream of music that we've played on the show. This will fit in nicely. From Washington, D.C., I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst. This has been Alt Latino.
Disculparme, mujer soy y lo seré. Solo vengo a declararle que quieta nunca estaré. En la casa, a la calle, el desierto hay maquiladora. En la casa y en la calle, el desierto hay maquiladora. Disculpame, mujer.